technology. I read a story recently about a country guy or a guy from the hills, however you want to put it, that it won't offend you, and his son going to the mall for the first time in their lives. And as they stood in wonder, as they seen all those glass walls, they stood at one door in particular, and they just stood and watched as this elderly lady in a wheelchair came up to it and pressed a button, and the metal door slid open. She rolled inside what looked to be a closet, and the door shut, and then they watched as they heard bells ring, and the numbers on top kept going higher, and then they began to descend back to one, and the bell dinged again, the door opened, and out walked a 24-year-old blonde lady. The boy said, "Daddy, what is that?" And he said, "It's a miracle. Go get your mother." You're beautiful, Missy. And today we're going to do the fourth, and I promise there's only five. It would have been good if this would have been the Ten Commandments, because I could have said something about if two stone tablets were good enough for the Israelites, we wouldn't have to worry about the wrong songs being up on a projector. But I'll save that joke. You'll hear it again. Today we're going to talk about the Red Sea, the crossing of the Red Sea. And that story is all about a miracle. And that's a word really that we throw around pretty loosely most of the time today. We use it a lot when we talk about sports. If a baseball team scores 5 runs in the bottom of the 9th to win a game, it's a miracle. If a kicker kicks a field goal as time expires, it's a miracle. When the United States beat Russia in a hockey game, that was the miracle on ice. They even created a movie called The Miracle about that. In Fort Myers, Florida, there's a minor league baseball team called the Fort Myers Miracle. If you make it to work tomorrow on time, it might be a miracle. It will be for me. How many times do we see on the TV a commercial advertising the next miracle diet? I am at that stage where you do nothing and eat everything on that diet. But that's the idea. You do nothing, you eat what you want, and you're going to lose weight like crazy. And then somehow we're shocked when that doesn't really happen. We even have a sandwich spread that we call Miracle Whip. My point is that we've really dumbed down the definition of a miracle. A miracle is a supernatural power, where a supernatural power alters a natural activity. It is an event. It's not a feeling. It's not a philosophy. It's something that actually occurs. And today we're going to talk about one of those miracles in the book of Exodus. This miracle, again, was an event. It is something that actually happened, and it was where the supernatural power of God blew away the natural law. We're going to start in Exodus chapter 13. And the last time that I spoke, we talked about how God sent the plagues upon Egypt to try to convince Pharaoh to let the Israelites free from their slavery. And it ended with that 10th plague, that of the death of the firstborn. And then Pharaoh finally relented to let God's people go. And that's where we're going to pick up this morning, here in verse 17 of chapter 13 in Exodus. It says, "When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country, though the route was shorter. For God said if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by the desert road toward the Red Sea." We see there that finally Pharaoh has relented, and he agrees to let the Israelites free. And there's been so much devastation for these people. For 430 years, the Israelites had been slaves to the Egyptians, and they had been treated ruthlessly. And it was a hard time. And in my way of thinking, you would think God would get them out of there as soon as possible with the shortest route possible. But that isn't what God chose to do. God didn't lead them on the direct route. The shortest distance between two points is a straight line, but God isn't interested here in geometry. The shortest route isn't always the one He chooses. The fastest path isn't always where He leads us. And the truth is that you can't microwave a miracle. And I'm going to use that word miracle a lot. You can think of God moving in our lives. I believe that that is something that still occurs, that we still have a God that moves in our lives. And there is no shortcuts or no easy answers or no quick fixes. And that doesn't stop any of us from trying. Some of us at this point may be trying to microwave a miracle. We may be trying to force God's hand, trying to make Him do what we want when we want it. I find myself guilty of this, and I've told you all many times before that patience isn't really one of my strong suits, and the microwave really helps me out a lot. And I'll take you to another one of my favorite things, pizza. It may come as a shock to some of you all. But I like to have pizza because I know I'm going to have some pizza the next day as well. And I know in my mind that if I put that in the oven and warm it up, that it's going to taste better. And it really does. It tastes better if you reheat it in the oven. But what's a microwave for? It's quicker. It's faster. And I'm going to suffer, or I will take a little bit of inferiority so I can get it faster. And that right there may be the first spiritual truth we talk about today. I think how many of us have settled for something inferior just because it was something that we could get faster. That's why we make a lot of the bad decisions we make in our life. That's why people find themselves walking away from God. That God, for them, sometimes takes too long. They settle for the inferior so they can get something faster. And miracles, God moving, is something that rarely happens immediately. And you can say, yeah, well, when God parted the Red Sea, that was immediate. But if you were to tell that to one of the Israelites then, they would tell you that that was anything but immediate. And I, again, am guilty of looking for an immediate answer. I've done it in my personal life and my family life. When I see a problem, I like to try to get rid of it with a solution. And that's how I am. And if I don't know how to do it, I try to invent a way of doing it. And that causes problems in and of itself. When I see a problem and I don't see an imminent solution, I try to manufacture one. And if I can't manufacture one, then you try to force God's hand and try to make Him do what you want when you want it. When God led His people out of Egypt, He didn't take the quickest road. And He rarely does that for any of us either. Miracles don't come equipped with a fast forward button. We'll look here in Exodus 14 of what happened next. Here in verse 1, the Bible says that the Lord said to Moses, tell the Israelites to turn back and encamp near Pi-Hereth, near Migdol in the sea. They are to encamp by the sea, directly opposite of Baal-Zephon. Pharaoh will think the Israelites are wandering around in the land in confusion, hemmed in by the desert, and I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them. But I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. So the Israelites did this. God here tells the Israelites to abandon the direct route in order to confuse Pharaoh. Pharaoh would look and see how the Israelites were wandering around, and he would believe that they were the ones that were lost. When he thought that they were lost, he was going to come after them. And Pharaoh here, though, isn't the only one who's confused, is he? And again, that road to a miracle, that road to God working, a lot of times is long and confusing. Multiple times, God told the Israelites to take an indirect route. He told them to turn around or go back. And instead of a straight line, he had them zigzagging all over the place. And if you look at where you are and wonder how you came to the place you're at. Maybe you don't have an idea of where you're going next. Maybe it feels like God is leading you in circles. Or maybe it even feels like you're going backwards. But again, that road is never straight. It's always windy and bumpy and confusing. Before a miracle happens, you're not sure where you are. You're not sure where you're going, and you're definitely not sure what God is doing. God here was leading the Israelites all over the map, and it was confusing Pharaoh, and it caused him to make a horribly bad decision when he decided to come after the Israelites. And you think, how many bad decisions do we make because the road is long and confusing? When we try to make something happen, and we find ourselves getting swallowed up by our own Red Sea because of it. And now at first look, it looks like the Israelites understood God's plan here. When God told them to turn back and to keep following this road, the Bible simply says the Israelites did this. But what we have to remember here is that there was no imminent danger yet. They didn't feel threatened. It was kind of a weird and confusing route to take, but it really wasn't that big of a deal. It was better than slavery. And so they were kind of just along for the ride. Wherever Moses led, they were glad to go. But that changes very quickly. If we look at the next verse in Exodus 14, it says, "When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his officials changed their mind about them and said, 'What have we done? We've let the Israelites go and have lost their services.' So he had his chariot made ready and took his army with him. He took 600 of his best chariots, along with the other chariots of Egypt, with officers over all of them. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, so he pursued the Israelites, who were marching out boldly. The Egyptians and all of Pharaoh's horses and chariots, horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them as they camped near the sea, near Pi-Hereth, near opposite of Baal-Zephon. And Pharaoh approached. The Israelites looked up, and there were Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified, and they cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, 'Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, "Leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians"? It would have been better for us to live and to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert." The Israelites here went from bold and confident to terrified and desperate. The difference here was the introduction to a problem into their equation. The problem was Pharaoh's chariots bearing down on them. The problem that they seen didn't have an immediate solution, and their response was to go into total panic. They didn't see how they could ever get out of this, but how really was the wrong question. If you want to see God move, if you want to see a miracle, you have to stop asking how and start asking who. If you had an answer to every solution, you wouldn't need a miracle. A lot of us claim that we would like to see a miracle in our lives, but there are very few of us that want to be in a situation that requires one. If you find yourself at a point where you need God to move, then you have questions that you don't have answers for, that you need help from God. You might be asking Him for a favor, but you're not really asking Him for a miracle. But when you get to that point, and if you're not there now, there will come a point where you find yourself at one of those places. When you get to that point of an unanswerable question and an unsolvable problem, it's critically important that we ask the right question. And the right question is not how. The right question is who. And Moses is going to give us the answer to that who question in the next verses. When all the Israelites were losing their minds, here's what Moses told them. It says, "Moses told the people, answered the people, 'Do not be afraid. Stand firm and you will see the deliverance and the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians will see you today, or the Egyptians that you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still.'" So we really need to stop asking how and start asking who. Who will fight for you? Well, the Bible tells us that the Lord will fight for you. The God who created all things will fight for you. Now, how will He do it? Well, I can't stand up here and tell you I know, because I don't. But neither does anyone. It's not how we to understand that this is going to happen. If we get bogged down in the how, we will never get to asking the who. And that's extremely difficult for those of us who want all the answers up front. The person who wants every I dotted and every T crossed, if that's you, this is going to be a very hard thing to do. But if you need that move of God, if you need that miracle, the first thing that has to be sacrificed is self, control of your situation. You're not going to be told how it's going to work out. You're not going to be told how the fight is won. We are just told who is fighting on our behalf. And the thing is, though, that really is enough. Knowing how is unnecessary. Knowing who is enough. In Romans, the 8th chapter, in verse 28, there lies one of the greatest promises in all of Scripture. There, Paul writes and says, "And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love Him and who have been called according to His purpose." Paul there doesn't tell us how God works. We're only told that He works. We're not told that everything that happens to us is good, but we're told that God works everything together for our good. We're not promised a life without pain, but we're promised a life where we are loved. We're not told how God will accomplish His purpose through us, only that His purpose will be accomplished. If you want to ask a question that will strangle your faith to death, keep asking that question, how. How is the breeding ground for doubt? How is the pavement on which people walk away from God? Who is the question that gives rise to faith? Who is the question that reminds us of our God, who is all-powerful and everlasting, while our problems are fleeting? Who is the mailing address for hope and faith and life? Moses told the Israelites, "The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still." That problem there was unsolvable. And to really understand that, we have to think about where the Israelites were. The Egyptians were bearing down on them from the north, and they were pinned up against the mountains to the south and to the west, and the Red Sea was to the east. They were almost completely surrounded without a means of escape. And Moses said, "You need to be still. The Lord will fight for you." And this exposes the ultimate difference between how and who. How leads to worry. Who leads to worship. When you find yourself with a question that doesn't have any answers, when you become trapped, when you simply don't have any idea what to do, worship is essential. Worship leads us to that way of God moving. You worship your way to God moving in your life. And a big part of worship is obedience. Miracles take a long time. The road is long and confusing, but when God finally does speak, you follow. In the next verses, the Bible says that then the Lord said to Moses, "Why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on." God said, "Here you are. You don't know what to do. You're crying out to me for a miracle. Well, the time has come. If you want to see a miracle happen, you all have got to get moving." And it's easy for us to turn prayer into laziness. There's nothing else I can do. I'm just going to pray for God to move. Well, that's great, unless God is telling you to move. You waiting on God to move is a great thing. God waiting on you to move is a terrible thing. We can find ourselves in situations where we short-circuit the work of God. If all you're going to do is sit around and worry, if you're using prayer not to seek God, not to ask for Him for a miracle, but instead as an excuse to be lazy or an excuse to avoid taking a risk, that Red Sea in your life is never going to part for you. Sometimes the problem is that we don't know what to do. But a lot of times we know exactly what we are to do. We just don't want to do it. And again, if that's where we are, the Red Sea will never part for us. Even though God fights for you, He has to have a willing partner with us. If we are not willing to obey, even when it's scary, even when the outcome isn't guaranteed, don't expect a miracle. The Red Sea would have never parted for the Israelites if they hadn't moved. And if we're lazy or fearful or rebellious, it's not going to part for us either. God told Moses that the time had finally came to get moving because a miracle is here. And so we came through all of this sermon to finally get to this miracle. And in verse 16, it says, God told Moses to raise your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea to divide the water so the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground. I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will go after them. And I will gain glory through Pharaoh and all his army, through his chariots and his horsemen. The Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I gain glory through Pharaoh and the chariots and his horsemen. And the angel of the Lord, who had been traveling in front of Israel's army, withdrew and went behind them. And the pillar of cloud also moved from in front and stood behind them, coming between the armies of Egypt and Israel. Throughout the night, the cloud brought darkness to one side and light to the other side, so neither went near the other all night long. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and all that night the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. The waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground, and the wall of water on their right and on their left. The Egyptians pursued them, and all of Pharaoh's horses and chariots and horsemen followed them into the sea. During the last watch of the night, the Lord looked down from the pillar of fire and the cloud and the Egyptian army and threw them into confusion. He jammed their wheels of their chariots so that they had difficulty driving, and the Egyptians said, "Let's get away from these Israelites. The Lord is fighting for them and against Egypt." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea so that the waters may flow back over the Egyptians and the chariots and the horsemen." And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak the sea went back to its place. The Egyptians were fleeing toward it, and the Lord swept them into the sea. The waters flowed back and covered the chariots and horsemen and the entire army of Pharaoh that had followed Israel into the sea, and none of them survived. That is one of God's greatest miracles, and it can set the stage for one of our greatest mistakes. If we read this scripture and we see it as an awesome story, and it makes a great Charlton Heston film and a so-so Christian Bale film, but if that's all we get from it, we're really missing the point. The point is not to just see how God used a miracle to rescue the Israelites. The point is for us to reveal that God still uses miracles to rescue His people today. And that miracle came in the death and resurrection of Jesus. Jesus, God in the flesh, died a brutal death on the cross. But then, again, in a miraculous move by God, He rose again 3 days later. It wasn't a dream. It wasn't a vision. It was an event. It was reality. Jesus died and was rose back to life. And it's through that miracle that God rescues us today. And so the question left is this: if God worked a miracle to save you, why would you believe that He has given up on you? That's where the Israelites were. You think about it. God had just sent 10 plagues, 10 miraculous displays of power to rescue them from the Egyptians. And even though they had been rescued by 10 different miracles, they still were scared. They still believed that God had given up on them. They never asked, why would God move in a miraculous way to rescue us? Their only idea was to turn around. They never asked why God would do that, only to turn around and give up on them. And that question is the same for us today. If God would send his son to die on the cross and use a miracle to rescue us, why would he ever give up on us? The cross and the empty tomb stand as daily reminders that God has not and will not give up on his people. And if you need a miracle, if you need God to move in your life, we have a God that specializes in doing just that. Maybe this morning you're here and that miracle you need is that miracle of salvation. It took a miraculous move by God to give the power to save us through the death of Jesus, through that death and resurrection of Christ. And if you've never accepted that, we encourage you to do that today as together we stand and we sing.